This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
Yeehaw! Thank you, thank you, thank you. Hope everybody had a thankful Thanksgiving. I know I did. I went down to the Pocosin Moore Evans clan and had many, many casserole dishes along with our smoked turkey at our oyster roast. True Chesapeake Bay way to have Thanksgiving. Let me invite our guest on. Let's see. I think I have all the proper buttons pushed. Khaki Demick, how are you, ma'am?
I'm just fine. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you. How was your Thanksgiving?
My Thanksgiving was perfectly lovely. There were three different kinds of pie, which is what Thanksgiving's all about for me.
And how many people were there?
Nine people.
Nine. Okay, yep. So that's one pie for every three people. You have us beat. I think we had seven different desserts, four pies, three other dishes, but there were like 32 of us. So percentage doesn't hold up to yours.
So you didn't have much pie left over.
Well, you have to remember that it wasn't just one pie for each flavor. There were like two and two and three of the same flavors. So number of actual desserts on the table probably beat yours, but that's not the same thing. The options don't hold up.
I see. Do you prefer pecan or pumpkin for breakfast the next morning?
Well, you see, I drove down on Thursday morning and drove back late Thursday afternoon, and the hard part was not falling asleep at the wheel from all the food still going through the system.
Sugar and tryptophan working against you.
Yes. Sean McCord, step over here. Tell us about your Thanksgiving, because it's an important part of what everybody had going on this week.
Well, thanks, Rick. We went out to Manassas to spend Thanksgiving Day with my wife's sister and her family. And then we came back Thursday night and I thought, you know what, we don't have any leftovers. We didn't have that residual smell of turkey in the house. So Friday went out and bought a 14-pound organic turkey from the West Main Street Organic Butcher. And my wife gamely cooked it up yesterday and we had a second Thanksgiving. And it was great. We got all the smells. Now we have all the leftovers, too.
Now that sounds nice, to have Thanksgiving multiple times in the same week. I would say that I'm jealous, but I'm not, because I had so much food to eat on Thursday that I think it carried over until Sunday morning. All right, well, let's get into the topic at hand, because we're going to be talking about folks who didn't have sort of the standard Thanksgiving. We're going to be talking about the homeless, the guest today, Khaki Demick. She's the executive director for the Thomas Jefferson Area Coalition for the Homeless. Khaki, there's got to be a more simple way to say that throughout the hour.
I know it doesn't just roll off the tongue. You're welcome to say T-Jack, if that helps. Homeless Coalition.
The Homeless Coalition. Mm-hmm. The Haven is also part of what is a part of the Coalition for the Homeless, correct?
It is. The Haven at First to Market is actually a project of the Thomas Jefferson Area Coalition for the Homeless. It's the most visible project we've got.
Well, Khaki Demick will be here for the hour as we're talking about homelessness and the homeless. Lovinson's 94.7, hopefully listening today. And one of the reasons that we're here is thank to folks like Blue Ridge Graphics. They are at Meade Avenue and East High Street here in Charlottesville. They provide custom T-shirts and sportswear, as well as promotional items for organizations and businesses and schools. Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. Online, it's brgtshirts.com. All right, back to our guest, Khaki Demick, Executive Director for Thomas Jefferson Area Coalition for the Homeless. Major project of that being the Haven, which I think I'll try and focus on that throughout the hour as my name for our guest today, Khaki Demick, representing the Haven, and as well as homeless and homelessness. What went on at the Haven for Thanksgiving? Because what we're doing at the Haven is providing needs for our area homeless, correct?
Yes. We're a day shelter for the homeless downstairs in our day haven. So we have a daily breakfast meal that attempts to be as nutritionally dense and locally sourced as possible. We also have laundry, showers, computers, use of our telephone, use of our mailing address, short-term storage, and then referrals to social service providers on site with the attempt to create a comprehensive sort of one-stop shopping kind of place. And so Thanksgiving, we had a marathon breakfast brunch meal. So we started at 7 and ended at about 11, 11:30. There were dinners, big Thanksgiving dinners at the Salvation Army and at Pochum later that evening.
You know, we're sort of talking about homelessness homelessness for the hour. Khaki Dimmick here, executive director for Thomas Jefferson Area Coalition for the Homeless. Can you define homeless and homelessness here? Because I've heard so many things, and my image in the head is of, I guess, sort of that big city issue where sleeping in boxes near the vents, vacated buildings, under the overpass, and we don't have all that in Charlottesville. Can you define what that is?
Certainly. We could spend the next 3 days sort of talking about definitions of homelessness, both legal definitions, funding-based definitions, and then sort of the colloquial kind of definitions that people have. And one of the things we do with folks who come to volunteer at the Haven at First and Market is talk about our sort of instant sort of built-in bias that we all have about the homeless. And I have a bias, and I've been working in anti-poverty work for 20 years, but when I close my eyes and I think of the word homeless, I think of a guy in his early 70s. He's a white guy. He's got a full beard. He's got a big trench coat. He's got a bottle in a paper bag, and he's got a shopping cart. And that's certainly an image that's been sort of come to me. I lived in New York City, so I have a big city image of homelessness as well. And that really doesn't reflect national or local homelessness. So the feds have a definition which basically says if you're living in a place that's not suitable or for living, so or like a garage or a car or on the street, or in an emergency shelter. So those are the sort of the most restrictive definition. The McKinney-Vento Act, which dictates the definition of homelessness for schools and some other places, has a broader definition, and that includes people who are doubled up. So somebody who's living in a house where there's too many people living in there. So they're technically not homeless because they're housed, but they're not housed suitably and not sustainably. So that's a slightly broader definition. And so the data, when you collect data on homelessness and you collect data on one definition for the other versus the other, you certainly have differing numbers. For the most part, homelessness is not having a place of your own. So not having a place where you get to have and make choices about your own life.
You mentioned that it's the federal versus this, political act, legal act that was put out there. Why do we need to have multiple definitions? Is this all economical?
Well, I think each, certainly locally, we have silos of response to homelessness or response to social services.
Tell me what that means.
So
silos.
So by that I mean a social service agency gets developed around a very specific, possibly narrow definition or mission, and it creates an infrastructure around that. And then if another social service provider starts or a nonprofit starts based on that particular, a different set of ideas, and they develop an infrastructure around that, but they live according to this very specific, narrow definition of what they do, and so they don't necessarily talk to each other, and they don't necessarily inform the broader community context. And that happens on a local level, but it happens on a federal level as well. And so each federal agency has developed its own definition for homelessness. Now, that's going to be corrected, actually. The Congress passed the Hearth Act this year, and it will come into effect in 2011, and it will unify all of the definitions for homelessness under one slightly broader definition for the feds, which will then dictate all of the local agencies and the way we collect data nationally. So we're looking forward to some rational unification for our data collection.
Do you have vision that that will help, or that that will actually at some point slice out a group that currently should be considered homeless?
It's actually a fairly broad definition that they're reflecting the sort of local experience that people have had with the more restrictive definitions in place. So I actually anticipate that it will be a more consistent and intuitive definition that will help us collect data over time so that we can compare apples to apples over the next 10 years versus comparing the sort of apples and kiwis and oranges and sometimes green peppers that we've had to look at for the last 10 years.
11:09 here on WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. Our guest today, Khaki Demick. She's the executive director of the Local Area Coalition for the Homeless. Khaki, you mentioned now a couple times numbers. Can you give me some statistics on homelessness, maybe some federal or national ones, and then bring me down to some local ones?
I'm afraid I don't know many big national numbers. I know some national data about how long people are homeless, which I can talk about in a little bit. But locally, HUD, which is the primary funding mechanism for homelessness intervention and prevention services nationally, creates an expectation that everyone who receives HUD funding, every community, has to conduct what's called a point-in-time homeless census once a year. And it's generally the third week of January. They dictate the date. We have to do several things on that date. We have to identify how many people are homeless. So we have to do essentially like a regular U.S. census, but for our homeless populations. And then we also have to identify who's in which kinds of beds in our community. So we have permanent supportive housing beds, we have transitional housing beds, and emergency shelter beds. And so who's using them and at what rate? And so it's a fairly significant project that the coalition undertakes every year. And so for 2009, there were 232 homeless people identified in our annual point-in-time count. For 2010, there were 274 people identified as homeless. And that group, that 274, breaks out to 219 adults, 28 dependent children who were sheltered, and then 27 people who were unsheltered in this last count in January of 2010. So that unsheltered number is actually significantly higher than the 2009 number, which was 14. So we had 14, a doubling of the number of people who were unable to be sheltered in the third weekend of January of this year. And then that this is where the definitions come into play, because there's a different definition that the schools have to use for homelessness, which includes a sort of broader definition of being doubled up or living in a camper or some of those places. And they identified 394 homeless students for the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission.
That's a lot more than, what did you say, 20-something?
274.
Well, right. You talked about dependent children.
Right, 28 that we were able to count. That's right.
That's a heck of a lot more.
It is. Absolutely. And it reflects a number of different things. It reflects a slightly different definition, but it also reflects that our point-in-time count concentrates on where people get served, sort of the traditional homeless services. Like, we went to soup kitchens, and we went to emergency shelters, and we went to Pacham, and we did some outreach out in the community where we thought there might be some campsites. But a number like 394 homeless students in the area reflects that there's a number of families who are not getting served by the traditional homelessness services sector. And so that begs some questions about how the rest of our data might be skewed towards a more chronically homeless population versus the sort of homeless families. And we hear from national data that the fastest growing subsets of the homeless population are homeless families that are intact in their homelessness, and then homeless young people, so between the age of 16 and 21, who are unaccompanied youth out and about, some of them having aged out of foster care and others who have been out on their own for a variety of reasons. And so we anticipate a real shift in the demographics of people and who are in need of our services in this community over the next couple of years if the national data bears out here.
This is WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. Rick Moore talking with Khaki Demick. She's the executive director of the Local Coalition for the Homeless, which includes The Haven, which may be the name that more people are familiar with, at least in the Charlottesville area. Khaki, we're talking about numbers here, but you twice now have used Pacham, and I don't think that everyone is familiar with what Pacham is. Can you give us a quick bit of information?
Pacham is a really important partner to The Haven at First the Market and a really critical part of the emergency response system that this community has for homelessness. PACHM stands for People and Congregations Engaged in Ministry, and it serves as a seasonal overnight emergency shelter for this community, operating roughly between October and April, using the good grace and volunteer energy of local churches to serve as host sites throughout the course of this 5 or 6 months of operation, where homeless folks get a chance to stay for a week or two at a time in the church basement or a church social hall, and then move to another site in another week or two throughout the course of the season. And they offer 60 regular emergency shelter beds that are incredibly critical because their definition for service is low barrier. So they do allow people who perhaps have active substance abuse issues or alcohol or drug and alcohol issues that might not be under control. And so they're a low barrier shelter. They allow people to come in who would perhaps not meet the standards for the Salvation Army. And so they provide a really critical service that allows essentially no one to freeze to death in our community, which is incredibly important.
When you say low barrier, does that mean that at the Salvation Army, if you come in drunk, you can't stay there?
That's correct.
So the Salvation Army, and I don't want to point fingers, but the Salvation Army says that it's more important to be sober than to have a place to sleep.
I think the Salvation Army, like all of these service providers, would say they can't be the only or the sole response to homelessness in the community. And so Salvation Army, I think, reasonably has a set of standards that says we would like to provide our services to a group that looks like this, that looks like a group that has addressed or is currently addressing its drug and alcohol issues or its mental health issues, that is actively looking for a job, that sort of subset of the population. And I think it's reasonable for social service providers to identify the criteria for which they're going to respond. But it did sort of create the need for a more low barrier response in this community because there were people who were not being housed with that sort of higher standard for care. And that's why PACHM was created by the local churches. And then also that's why the Haven was created to serve as the equivalent low barrier daytime service provider.
Now, the Salvation Army has some religious background to it.
They're a faith-based organization, sure.
Okay, and PACHM is as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the Haven is actually in an old church.
It is.
What role does religion play in helping the homeless? It seems like, and obviously that's only three, but in many of the organizations that are attempting to provide a service, that there is a strong religious background.
Well, I'm not sure if what role religion has to play other than as a potential motivator for the community members to get involved. But we see that also with Impact as a major sort of community force in this community. I think that's actually a point of pride for the Charlottesville region, is that most of the homelessness infrastructure that was developed in this community was developed from the private sector, from churches and individuals and churches saying we need to do something on our own to create a safety net for this particular subset of the larger community. I think that certainly there are other places where that safety net was created solely by local government or by state government, and those folks spend a lot of their time talking about how they might engage faith-based organizations in their work, knowing that it takes all of us. It takes this community unified together to be able to respond and reverse a trend like homelessness.
11:18 here and WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. Khaki, we talked briefly about statistics. How have statistics changed from 2010, from 2000? We've had economical changes in our nation, and many other things that might factor into the number and the type of homeless individuals. Can you give us any background on numbers and people?
Sure. Over the last 10 years, we were talking about apples and oranges and green peppers before, and this is one of the issues of being able to look over the last 10 years and have good, solid, reliable data to draw some conclusions. And we have good data, but it's not always consistent data. So there's more sort of trends related to the kinds of needs that people have. They're more acute in 2010 they're more chronic in 2010. They're more complicated. So people don't just need one piece of intervention. They need, some folks need a more sort of comprehensive sort of case managed response where they get help from multiple sectors of the social services system and not just the homelessness system. And so that certainly has been a shift. I think that, that there was a time when if you connected somebody to affordable housing, they could be and would be okay on their own. Certainly the economic climate has affected work pretty dramatically. Last year during our point in time count, 58% of the homeless folks that we surveyed had some form of employment. And this last year in 2010, we only had 30%. So actually just slightly under 30%, about 29.3% of the folks we interviewed had some form of employment. So that's pretty significant. There's no chance of sort of climbing the ladder to affordable housing, even subsidized affordable housing, if you don't have a job. And so if our folks can't get jobs, there's no chance of them getting housed. And so there's this constant vicious cycle. We have a number of folks who are regular attenders at the Haven who have jobs, and so they've been saving their money and being diligent about it, and being taking the financial literacy class at the Monticello Area Community Action Agencies and learning how to save, and yet they will never at this pace have enough for affordable housing in this community. There's a study done, I think it was probably about 3 years ago, that you have to work 114 hours a week at minimum wage in order to afford a fair market rent in this community. So you can imagine how hard it would be for somebody who is facing homelessness, unable to keep a consistent job, doesn't have benefits, has a hard time saving, and then save enough for long enough to get into one of these apartments. And so that would be only if you had no other additional issues, like you didn't have dependent children, you didn't have a mental health issue, either before you became homeless or while you're homeless, you didn't have a substance abuse issue. So imagine trying to do all of those things while you were struggling with one of those extra exacerbating circumstances.
1121 here on the Wake Up Call. Our phone number today, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS is toll-free. Dial us up, ask questions, or make comments on the topic of homelessness here with Khaki Dimmick, who's the executive director of the local Coalition for the Homeless. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. It's fair and sunny today. Highs in the upper 40s. Clear tonight. Lows 25 to 30. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny. Highs 50 to 55. Lower 50s in Lynchburg and Richmond. Right now in the valley, it's 37, 39 in Lynchburg, 43 in Richmond, 41 here in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let's thank the backyard for their support. The university's culinary secret at the end of Elliewood Avenue across from Para Coffee. The backyard invites you to enjoy outdoor patio seating in their heated tent and try their winter menu. The backyard has seasonal brews on tap and is available for private events. For more info, it's 202-8215, or you can find the backyard on Facebook. Also, thank Dixon Disposal. Dixon reminds you that you can reduce household garbage by purchasing products with reuse and recycling in mind. Small changes in your lifestyle can keep our planet green for years to come. When Dixon's picks up your trash, they sort and separate it for recycling. You can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. More can be found 434-978-2111 or DixonDisposal.com. And WNRN wants to congratulate Chad Freckman of Charlottesville. He was the winner of the $100 in groceries from Integral Yoga and WNRN. He paid his pledge and then used the IY offer on the premium sheet and was chosen as the winner this past Friday afternoon. The premium offer will continue through the end of February, and the Integral Yoga premium sheet offer and grocery giveaway will return in the spring from IY and WNRN. All right, back to our topic today on homelessness and the area homeless with Khaki Dimmick, executive director of the Area Coalition for the Homeless. More people are familiar with the Haven. Khaki, tell me about The Haven. People know that it has something to do with helping the homeless, and it's near the downtown mall here in Charlottesville, but there's more to it than that, right?
Indeed. We have a beautiful building that was gifted to this community by Tom Shadiak, who filmed Evan Almighty and went to UVA and has a soft spot in his heart for Charlottesville and also for the area homeless here. And the Haven at First the Market opened January 19th. The day Haven served its first breakfast meal there to 50 people that day, much to our great surprise. We weren't sure how many people might show up that day. We're open every day from 7 to 5. I went through the list of things we provide. We're ultimately trying to provide a place where people can safely be during the day. There were a group of people meeting probably about 5 years ago from the local library saying, that the homeless folks who were coming to the library were in need of a safe and welcoming place to be during the day, and so they were opting to be in the library, which because the sort of de facto day haven or day shelter at that time. But really, that's not the library's mission, and so the good and compassionate people of the library met with some other folks and said, can we create something where people can be during the day? And so the Haven sort of evolved over the course of several years of planning. And so we provide a very specific direct service downstairs in our day haven. We also provide office space for community partners to be in the building. And we are really fortunate to have as permanent partners in the Haven at First and Market. The folks from Pacham both provide administrative services and advocacy services in their office at the Haven at First and Market. We also have the Charlottesville Health Access Group, which provides critical health navigation services to the homeless and very poor in this community so they can get the care that they need. And we also benefit from Region 10, the New City Arts Initiative, Legal Aid Justice Center, Charlottesville Department of Social Services, the Monticello Area Community Action Agency, Offender Aid and Restoration on our own, and HIV AIDS Services Group, providing both satellite office hours and some sort of drop-in services in our building. Our goal is to create a safe place for people to get connected to the services that they need will help them transform their lives in one place. Our secret, not-so-secret goal is that we create an opportunity for these social service providers to work together collaboratively in an attempt to break down some of those silos I mentioned earlier. If we join both our forces, both our resources and our brain power, our financial resources, our planning resources together, this is a community that can end homelessness. We talked about 274 homeless adults in this community. That's a big number, but that's not a huge number. That's not a number that's impossible to tackle. And so if all of these resources join forces together, identify shared goals and shared resources and shared sort of hopes and dreams and motivations, we can end homelessness. And so the Haven at First and Market has a sort of an underground goal of creating positive, good working relationships with people within the context of that building that might create systems that can get blown out of that building to impact the larger safety net.
All right, our guest today, Khaki Dimmock, Executive Director from the Area Coalition for the Homeless, as well as at The Haven, which we were just describing. 979-0919 is a number to call if you have question or comment for Khaki. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS is the toll-free number. If you are outside of the Charlottesville area, and we have a call right now. We have Betsy, who's a UVA student. Betsy, you with us?
Yes, hello.
Hello. Thank you for calling. Do you have a question or a comment for Khaki?
I do. I'm a fourth-year student at the University of Virginia, and I've enjoyed living in Charlottesville these past 4 years. I'm from Roanoke, Virginia, originally. My question is pertaining to UVA students' involvement with outreach to the homeless. I and several of my friends have had affiliations or spent our time with the Hope Community Center, and we're really excited to see the Haven come about in the Charlottesville community. And my question is, for UVA students, many of whom reside in Charlottesville during their undergraduate or graduate experiences, many are surprised by the high numbers of homelessness in Charlottesville or just the different ways that people interact with homelessness in the community. And my question is, what ways can students be involved, or what should students know about housing, working with homeless folks in Charlottesville, because we have many UVA students who live in off-grounds housing. Some people do cite that as being one reason housing is so expensive in certain parts of Charlottesville. And I know there are many students who would love to be involved but just don't know what the situation is or where to start. What would your response be to these students as a possibility for involvement or support?
Well, my first response is thanks for wanting to be involved. We need all the people in our community to be engaged to end homelessness, and that includes folks who are temporary guests and residents of our community like EVA students. We benefit actually from a large number of volunteers who come to us through the Madison House. So Madison House engages students in volunteerism, and we're our partner with Madison House. And so we have volunteers at the Haven at First and Market who serve three to four-hour shifts in our kitchen every morning, helping to make, serve, and clean up after breakfast. We also benefit from volunteers who work 2-hour shifts throughout the course of the day, starting at 7 a.m. in our day haven, helping guests get access to their storage bins, get the stuff they need to get into a shower, and maybe help people figure out how to fill out an online application using our computers, generally offer a smile and a safe and sort of welcoming environment for the homeless folks at the day haven. We also benefit from volunteers who help us in our community garden, planting, weeding, harvesting. Right now we're trying to get as many leaves into our community garden as possible for the winter, so we definitely benefit from volunteers doing that. So I think there's lots of actual volunteer opportunities for people, particularly for students who are willing to make a sort of a regular commitment. It doesn't have to be a frequent regular commitment, but a regular enough commitment so that you get the sort of training and support you need for the volunteer position you end up in. And also an opportunity to develop relationships with the people that you're serving. I think that's one of the most important and potentially sort of transformative aspects of volunteering with the homeless is bridging this gap, this sort of false sense of otherness that we have about who the homeless are. The homeless are people who lost their houses. So ultimately, that's it. The homeless, 80% of homeless people are homeless less than 2 years, 40% less than 6 months. So these are folks who had a before and they have an after. And so I think that's one of the most important things for people to remember, that when we see somebody sort of in their worst moment in homelessness right now, they didn't used to be homeless and they probably aren't going to be homeless for the rest of their lives. In terms of the larger question around affordable housing and policy, there's a group called the Coalition for Housing Opportunity that's recently been formed in this community. We've been meeting for about a year to talk about ways that we can increase and improve accessibility to affordable housing in this community. And certainly the impact of UVA and UVA students on local housing has a dramatic impact on folks who are not UVA students. At the same time, UVA is a potentially huge, fantastically positive resource around affordable housing. And so the Coalition for Housing Opportunity has actually done a presentation. We met with a number of folks at the School of Architecture, and we talked about the models that have been created in other communities between universities and their local homelessness or housing organizations, and the sort of joint public-private partnerships that have created fantastic opportunities for both the students in those schools but also the community residents, with a sort of a sense that the edge of the grounds and the beginning of grounds, the beginning of community, and in other areas, of course, the beginning of the campus and the end of the campus and the beginning of the community are not as clear, and maybe they shouldn't be so clear, that we really need each other, both in terms of educational goals for those universities, but also in terms of community spirit goals that we have in order to live our sort of most prosperous, vibrant kind of community lives together.
That is fantastic. I'm really glad to hear it. I'm involved in Madison House in various capacities, and I knew of several programs, but I'm really excited to hear even more ways for students to be involved and some of the collaborative efforts that are ongoing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Phone lines are open, 979-0919, 1-877 WNRN Rocks. Call up, ask a question, make a comment. Our guest today, Khaki Dimmick, Executive Director from the Thomas Jefferson Area Coalition for the Homeless. Khaki, it didn't get said, but does the university have a negative effect on the cost for housing, and should they do something about housing more of their own?
Well, I think the should part of that is left for other minds. I do think that UVA, the students have a significant impact and pressure on local affordable housing options in this community. I don't know that that having more on grounds housing would alleviate that necessarily. So I don't know what the solution is. I do think that the long-term goal of having the affordable housing partners in this community through the Coalition for Housing Opportunity partner together with UVA for sort of long-range joint planning makes good sense. And some of these other communities have done, in British Columbia, there's a great project where they built affordable housing for both students, for faculty, and for community residents all in one space where there was sort of shared access to resources of both the university and the community, which really enhanced everyone's experience. So I think there's great models out there for us to study together. I think engaging UVA, long-term planning, and the Coalition for Housing Opportunity is one way that we can sort of move towards that. I think this sense of sort of otherness is false, not just about the homeless, but also about sort of the students versus the rest of the community. I think we are each other, and so we require each other's best efforts to make a difference long-term as well.
And there is an article in today's Daily Progress about the university attempting to add even greater number of students to the current population. So that may be something that needs to be taken into account as you work on finding greater number of homes for those who need it.
Indeed. There's been, I think the response generally has been that if there's more students needing housing, that the private sector will respond by providing additional units. And I'm not sure that that has historically been happening over the last several years. And so there may be a more significant impact with more students coming on board. I do look forward to those continued conversations with UVA. I think that there's a potential that we can really make a big difference for each other's pressures and needs.
We're talking about housing here. We're talking about homelessness and the homeless with Khaki Dimmick, Executive Director for the Area Coalition for the Homeless, which includes The Haven. There's a project out there called The Crossings at 4th and Preston. For those who need to know, that's where the Preston Area Bodos is, just a block or two away from the downtown mall and the Omni. What's that all about? Because I know it by title, but not by much other.
This is actually some of the most exciting sort of transformative programs that we have coming online in the next year or so. There's a big shift both nationally and soon to be locally away from a sort of expanding the emergency services response that people have to the homeless and instead expanding the number of long-term permanent supportive housing programs that are in place and acknowledging that it's very difficult to address anything, including finding a job, including addressing your substance abuse issues or improving your parenting skills or addressing your mental health issue or even your physical health concerns while you are homeless. Being homeless can be a full-time occupation to try to just make sure that your body gets and does all the things it needs to do through the course of the day. And so the focus is both federally in terms of funding, long-term funding, and now I think our coalition is moving in this direction as well, is around creating these permanent supportive housing structures. And the Crossings at 4th and Preston will be what's called a single-room occupancy building, and so there will be 60 new units, essentially studio apartments, that will be built there, 30 of them designated for housing the chronically homeless, and 30 of them designated as very low-income apartments that will be essentially on the fair market. Housing 30 chronically homeless folks will be a transformative event in this community. They hope to break ground by the end of this year. I know the end of the year is creeping up rather quickly, but I think that they've actually identified a contractor and they're moving forward. They have all their funding in line for both programming and for construction. It's a project being spearheaded by Virginia Supportive Housing, which has a lot of really deep knowledge and expertise in providing these kinds of services. And this is really the sort of gold standard for addressing homelessness going forward. The idea of putting people in houses and providing them the social support services they need to stay in housing. Their average length of stay is a little more than 4 years for Virginia Supportive Housing, and so this has the potential to change the way downtown looks, to change the sort of pressure on some of the emergency services system like Pacha and like the soup kitchens and like Salvation Army.
One of the things doing my homework for the program today was finding out that the number one comment from any interviews or polls taken with those who are considered homeless was that they need privacy.
Yeah.
It's not the food. It's not the place to sleep. Those things they can typically find somewhere from someone. It's privacy.
If you think about all the things that you do in private, both on purpose and accidentally, they're generally things that you're very actively choosing not to share with somebody else. And so, and that's for a variety of reasons. We have certainly have lots of social conventions about what's appropriate in public and what's appropriate in private. But I think about being alone in my house and having an argument with my spouse. That would be something I would prefer most everybody not get to see. Me at my most unlovely, I would prefer that you don't make your judgment about who I am and how compassionate or smart or articulate I am based on that event. But if I'm homeless, I'm having that argument out loud in public. If I'm feeling kind of lazy and sorry for myself on a Saturday morning and I'm eating cereal with the bowl and the thing of milk sitting right on the coffee table in front of me while I'm watching daytime TV on a Saturday morning, my pajamas, refusing to shower, that actually happens quite frequently. But I wouldn't necessarily want you to see me in that moment. But if I'm homeless, you do get to see me in that moment. You get to see me when I'm lazy. You get to see me when I'm sad. You get to see me when I'm angry. You get to see me when I'm irrational. You get to see me all the time. And you can imagine that sort of public constant pressure of being in the public eye. You can also imagine what it means to have people making that kind of judgment about who you are based on the thing that they've seen in public about that. So if you decide to lay down in the grass because you're tired or simply because it feels nice to have grass on your back, and you do that in Lee Park downtown, people have a very different response to you than if you did that on grounds, right? We love to see students laying on the grass and on grounds. It means that we have students in this community, and that's nice. They're young people with young energy, and they're studying, they're enjoying the sun, they're enjoying the grass, but that's very different if you're an adult downtown. Having that kind of same shared experience downtown means that people are making a different kind of judgment about you. They think that you're lazy. If you're not working, we have in front of the Haven at First and Market, we have a smoking section in front. And we hear constantly from people how angry it makes them feel that there are people smoking cigarettes out on the benches in front of our building. We don't have a backyard. And so the question I ask is, where would you like them to go? And how would you like people to judge you based on when you're taking your breaks from your day? So I think one of the things that we often forget about what it means to be homeless is this constant sort of focused public life where you have to wake up every morning and figure out what you're going to do with your body, having a safe place to put your body tonight, having a way to eat three meals a day with your body, having a way to keep your body clean, to keep your body clothed, to eliminate all of the things that we have involved with you sort of managing the body homeless people do in front of other people.
11:42 here on the Wake Up Call with Khaki Dimmick.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Typically, taking out the trash is just a household chore, but not for Rose Brown. Disgusted by the amount of trash from her own household, she achieved the near impossible. She went an entire year practically trash-free. Did a former Charlottesville mayor try and choke one of his legal clients? And is this rumor true of Chef Peter Chang opening a Charlottesville restaurant? The Hook, free all year round. And support for today's programming comes from Ben Around Tattoos in downtown Waynesboro. They feature male and female tattoo artists, and they have thousands of designs available and can create work from a design that you provide. Ben Around Tattoos in downtown Waynesboro or in Charlottesville at 701 West Main Street. For more information online, benaroundtattoos.com. And we also want to thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support today. They feature the Columbia OmniHeat, a waterproof down jacket with 700 fill power to provide protection from wet and cold weather. Columbia OmniHeat jackets are available at Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, the outdoor store that knows